chapter 13, and as Josh mentioned, we're beginning a new series today on the parables and the miracles of Jesus. We're calling it Word and Deed, Parables of the Kingdom and Miracles of the King. We will be in this these passages for a number of weeks. We'll look at eight parables, and then we'll look at eight miracles of Jesus, the words of the kingdom and the deeds of the king. We're leaving the Sermon on the Mount, our time in the Sermon on the Mount, but we're really not leaving the Sermon on the Mount because the foundation of what we're going to be talking about was established by Christ in the teachings of the Sermon on the Mount. We'll begin with the parables. The miracles will focus on Christ, and the miracles will give us knowledge of our King, and in that knowledge we find salvation. The parables will give us knowledge of the kingdom, and in that knowledge we understand how we are to live in the kingdom that is not yet fully established. We are waiting for that time when Jesus will return, and he will fully establish his throne and his kingdom. And in the meantime, we live in that in-between time, don't we? The already, but the not yet. Into today's parables, one of the most well-known, I think, parables, and so in that sense, a bit of a challenge to preach the parable to you because you all really know this parable, but this has been called the parable about parables. It is an introductory parable to help us really understand the whole idea of parables that Jesus taught in the New Testament. But it also has a point that has been brought out a number of times already this morning, and I was talking with Buzz before the service that even the Bible study hour, he really set the table for this parable. When he talked about the king, he went to 2 Kings chapter 7, and Josh mentioned that this morning, that God had established a covenant with David, a kingdom forever. And that kind of sets the table for what we're going to talk about today. And Buzz talked about the idea of spreading that kingdom on earth, and that's just what this parable is going to tell us this morning. So as we look at Matthew chapter 13, and we look at the first parable that Jesus, according to Matthew, that Jesus taught the crowd, we're going to see that in this parable about parables, Jesus is going to teach that it is important for kingdom citizens to understand the secrets of the kingdom as a motivation to broadcast the good news of the kingdom. In other words, kingdom citizens must broadcast the good news of the kingdom because we know something that non-citizens don't know. And he talks about the secrets of the kingdom, and then he talks about broadcasting something. So what are those secrets and what are we to broadcast? We're going to look at the parable. If you have a Bible that's separated into paragraphs, you'll see that this really divides well into three paragraphs or three points for us that are very simple. The first, in verses 1 through 6, we're going to look at the parable of the sower itself. Jesus is going to tell the parable. And then in verses 10 through 17, he's going to explain to the disciples the purpose for parables. Why teach in parables? And then finally, he's going to explain this parable to us in the final verses 17 through 23. So let's look first of all briefly at the parable of the sower. I think it'll help us to understand a bit of the context. You know, a lot of people have said, you know, the parables of Jesus, you just kind of pick them out and then you explain them and you tell what you think they mean. And we don't really do that around here. We try to explain passages in the context of what they're saying and what Jesus actually meant when he told this parable. And it's interesting to note that if we were to read through Matthew from chapter 1 to chapter 13, we will find that Jesus had come to introduce the kingdom of heaven. And what we find is that the further he goes in introducing that and teaching about it and explaining it and proving himself as king, the higher the rejection of that idea comes. In other words, the more Jesus explains, the more he is rejected and the more the kingdom is rejected. Buzz began us in Matthew chapter 5 this morning in the Bible study hour talking a little bit about that, and it is just the genealogy of Jesus, and it talks about David being the son of Jesse and David being called the king. And then in verse 21, in the prediction of Christ, it says, "She will bear a son, and you will call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." All this took place to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet: "Behold, the virgin will conceive and bear a son, and you will call his name Emmanuel, God with us." God was to come to earth, and Jesus was coming in the line of David as king. And then we come to chapter 2, and it introduces us to the wise men. They've been called kingmakers. And the wise men come, and what do they say? They said, "Where is he who is born king of the Jews?" He's establishing Jesus as king of the Jews. And he says, it says further, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" And we know that shepherd and king are really synonyms in a lot of ways in scriptures, that kings were to shepherd the nation of Israel. And so more and more he's being introduced as the king. And in chapter 3, John the Baptist comes on the scene. And John the Baptist says, "In those days, John the Baptist came preaching in the wilderness of Judea, 'Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand.'" And so he introduces Jesus again as the kingdom. And he says, "There's one coming after me. I'm not worthy to tie his sandal. He's coming with his winnowing fork in his hand, and he will clear the threshing floor. He will come as king and judge." And so we see this idea of kingdom being built up, and come to chapter 4, and Satan offers Jesus the kingdoms of the world. And he defeats Satan, and he begins his ministry of preaching, and he says in verse 17, "From that time Jesus began to preach, saying, 'Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand.'" You're getting the idea that the king has arrived here. It looks like the king is on the scene. And then in chapters 5, 6, and 7, where we spent a number of months, we see the first teachings of Jesus in Matthew. And we went through that, and we saw his teaching on the kingdom. And what's the first thing that he says in that? In chapter 5 of the Sermon on the Mount, he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Now, that is not at all what the Jewish folks were looking for. Someone who would preach that blessed are the poor in spirit. Why? They were looking for a king who would conquer. They were looking for a king who would come and rule over Rome and reestablish Jerusalem and reestablish Israel as a powerful nation. They were looking for that. They were looking for the final end. They were looking for what Daniel chapter 2 talks about, and you can look at many places in the Old Testament, but in Daniel chapter 2, verse 44, it says that in those days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom, and that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to any other people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever. That's what they wanted. That's what they're looking for. And Jesus says they don't understand the mysteries of the kingdom. They don't understand the secrets of the kingdom. And what is he talking about? He's talking about, I believe, this period that the parables introduce us to, that after the king and the kingdom have been rejected, the cross now looms in the background. And there's no one of the Old Testament waiting for a king who would die. They did not understand this is what the kingdom of heaven is. This is the secret. This is the mystery of the kingdom. And then in chapters 8 through 10, he begins giving proof that he is that king. And we read stories like the cleansing of the leper and the healing of the centurion's son. And Jesus begins doing all of these miracles to prove that he is the king. But at the same time, the rejection of the king grows. The more he shows him, I am the king, the more they oppose him. This is a very strange situation, that the greater the evidence, the greater the rejection. And then in chapter 10, we come to the second major discourse in Matthew, and Jesus sends the disciples out. In chapter 10, verse 7, he says, and proclaim as you go, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. There's been a rejection, but you go and you proclaim to the Jews that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Well, we get to chapter 11, and it seems like even John the Baptist is somewhat doubting, or at least questioning what's going on here. And in chapter 11, verse 2, John the Baptist is in prison. It says, now when John heard in prison about the deeds of Christ, he sent word to the disciples and said to him, are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another? And Jesus says, just tell him what you see. I am the one who has come. But then by chapter 12, we get the full climax of the rejection of the king and the rejection of the kingdom. And in verse 14, it says this, but the Pharisees went out and conspired against him, how to destroy him. And they were seeking to destroy him. And then in verse 22, it says, then a demon-oppressed man who was blind and mute was brought to him, and he healed him so that the man spoke and saw. And all the people were amazed and said, can this be the son of David? But when the Pharisees heard it, they said, it is only by Beelzebub, the king, the prince of demons, that this man casts out demons. In other words, they're saying, this is Satan. This is of Satan. That is the point to which the rejection had come. And so at the end of the chapter, Jesus begins to judge the towns that had rejected him. But even in that rejection, at the very end of the chapter, there's hope. In chapter 12, verse 46, he says, while he was still speaking to the people, behold, his mother and his brother stood outside asking to speak to him. But he replied to the man who told him, who is my mother and who is my brother? Who are my brothers? And stretching out his hand toward the disciples, he said, here are my mother and my brothers. And then verse 50, for whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. In other words, though everyone had rejected him, Jesus says, if you believe in me, you are my brother, you are my sister, you are my mother. I have a relationship with you. There is still hope. So by chapter 13, the choice has pretty much been made. And from this point on, Jesus moves toward the cross. And we come in chapter 13 to Jesus' third major teaching points of the book of Matthew. And he begins teaching there in parables. And he begins in chapter 13, verse 1. The same day Jesus went out of the house and sat beside the sea, and great crowds gathered around him, so that he got into a boat and sat down, and the whole crowd stood on the beach, and he told them many things in parables. He told them many things in parables. He's now talking to the crowds. He's not talking to the disciples as he did in the Sermon on the Mount, but now he's talking to the crowds, and he's talking to them in parables. In parables. After everything that had happened in chapters 1 through 12, the king comes up, and he's on the boat, he's sitting down, and he's teaching them, and he tells them stories about farmers, and stories about seeds, and stories about weeds, and stories about bread, and pearls, and homeowners. And that is the message of the king. That is the message of the one they were supposed to be looking for. A message from the king. And he did not explain the parables to the crowd. He only explained the parables, we'll see, to the disciples. And so it seemed that some sort of new era has begun in the kingdom. So as we look at the parable, what is a parable? Well, it's very simple to explain, although more difficult to understand parables. It simply is a word made up of two words that means throw beside. In other words, put two things, place something alongside of something else, and compare them. And we see this throughout chapter 13 when we have eight parables here. And in verse 24, he says, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to. And then he says in verse 31, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven. The kingdom of heaven is like this. The kingdom of heaven is like, he's taking two things and he's laying them side by side and he's using the simple thing to explain the more complex thing. In other words, he's taking a story that everyone would be able to relate to. And he's explaining something that everybody cannot relate to. He's taking something that is earthly, and if you grew up in church or in Sunday school, you went to Sunday school, the very simple definition was given to just about every kid. It is an earthly story about a heaven with a heavenly meaning. So he takes something that's earthly to explain something that's heavenly. And so parables help us to understand, but understand only when they're explained. If a parable is not explained, the parable becomes a riddle. And it really becomes a riddle that means whatever you think it means, or it means something that you don't know what it means, so you just make something up. And the more that you do not understand, the less you know. In Mark chapter 4, when we read the same parable, but in Mark chapter 4, verse 10, it says this, and when he was alone, those around him with the 12 asked him about the parables. He had not explained it. And he said to them, to you has been given the secret of the kingdom, but to those outside, everything is in parables. Everything is a riddle, because I've not explained what I mean. And so when we look at this parable, we need to try to put ourselves in the place of the people there on the beach. They're on the beach and they're listening to these words of Jesus. We're so familiar with these words, it's hard for us to do that. But as we walk through this, try to do that. Okay, let's look at the parable itself. Jesus begins, the whole crowd still on the beach, and he was telling parables. A sower went out to sow. A sower. Something everybody understands. This was an agrarian society. Even if you're a city guy, you understand what a sower is. And when I think of the word sower, I think of the stories I used to hear of Johnny Appleseed. He'd take the seeds out and he'd start spreading the seeds. So everybody has an idea what this means. But it's interesting, nothing is said about the sower. This is called the parable of the sower, but we're not told anything else about the sower in the story. But it's called the parable of the sower. Many pastors who preach this say it'd probably be better to call this parable the soils, because there's more said about the soils than about the sower. But he goes out to sow, and when you go out to sow, and this is, Jesus does not explain this, but these fields were either plowed before or after the seed was sowed, or both before and after. We're not told here if the field had been plowed or if the field was waiting to be plowed, probably because that's not important to what Jesus was trying to teach the folks here. He was trying to communicate a point to them and not so much the details of what it means to be a farmer. But the sower would walk down the furrows, and he would have a bag on his shoulder, and he'd reach in the bag and with the seeds, and he would scatter the seeds. And when you scatter the seeds, he would It's interesting that this idea is, it comes from the word that we get the word broadcast. He would cast broadly the seeds. That became known as something else later in media. You broadcast. You're telling a lot of people about certain things. You're just throwing the words out there, kind of like throwing the seeds. It's possible that Jesus may have been looking up into the hills and he saw a sower. And he said, let me tell you a story about that guy up there on the hill. He's a sower. And this is what happens. So the sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some fell in the path. It doesn't say, interesting, also doesn't say anything about the seed, does it? It's the same seed. Same seed went, wherever it went, it's the same seed. It's not a different kind of seed, but there are four soils. There are four different kinds of soils, four types of soils, which the crowd would have understood. The first he says is the path, and the birds came and devoured them. The path, in these fields there were paths that people could walk on to get from one field to the other. As a matter of fact, in chapter 12, verse 1 says, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. It didn't mean he was tromping down somebody's grain fields. It meant he was going from place to place on one of these hard paths. The paths were trod down. They were more like sidewalks, just very, very hard, so that the seed could not penetrate, and it would just bounce around. And then the farmer would go down the other furrow, and the birds would come and take it up, and Luke tells us that the rest of it would be trampled. In other words, this was soil that could not be penetrated. Some of it fell on that. Then he says some of it falls on the second soil, which is rocky soil. Here we go. Other seeds fell in rocky soil where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up since they had no depth. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. This is a soil that in that part of the world, there are sheets of rock, bedrock, mineral rock, that in certain places are not deep into the ground, maybe a couple inches into the ground, and there's soil on top of these. This is not talking about little rocks that you can pick out. This is talking about an underlying layer of rock that you cannot see because there's some soil on there. And so the seed penetrates that soil, and because the sun comes down and hits that rock, it's warmer than the rest of the soil, so it quickly germinates. And you think, wow, this is going to be a good crop. This is already up here. But there's no root. So what happens? The sun comes out. It can't get down to the moisture in the ground. And so it is burned. It looks promising, but it burns. The third soil is the thorny soil. The thorny soil. Other seed fell in among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them out. What is this thorny soil? It is not... they didn't sow seed hoping to grow it where all the weeds are growing. They plowed the weeds under. They plowed the thorny weeds under. But we know in Southwest Florida, if you live here, if you don't get the roots, you don't get the weeds. And the weeds are right back up. And what happens is your lawn is taken over by weeds, and you usually give up and you say, they're all green, so I'm going to mow it. The lawn's going to be green, and we're good. Either that or you call Axel and let him take care of it. But these were plowed under. This is where the thorns, the plants with thorns live, and they grow back quickly, and they're stronger than the seed that is growing, and they choke out the weaker plants. But the fourth is good soil. There's good soil. There are three types that are not good soil, and there's one that is good soil. It says, other seed fell in good soil. It produced grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. This was soil that produced a great crop. If you had a 10% increase, that is a great crop. Jesus is saying, this soil can produce unimaginably well. This soil is soft, and it's deep, and it's clean. It's the kind of soil you like walking in barefoot. You just walk in it, and it's cool, and it's clean, and it's soft, and this is good soil. And the yield is extraordinary. There's possibility of extraordinary yield. And so Jesus says those words. And that's it. And so what did they understand of what Jesus says? He said, "He who has ears, let him hear." In other words, did you get what I just told you? You understand what I just told you? And then Matthew goes into an explanation, not to the crowd, but to the disciples. So there's a simple parable, four soils. The path gives no possibility for seed to germinate. The rocky soil, the seed germinates, but it's quickly burned up. Weeds grow up and choke out soil, and then there's the good soil. And then Matthew says in chapter or verse 10, the second point, that he explained what this parable means. When the disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" And he said to them, to the disciples, "It has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given." And then he goes on in verse 12 and he says, "For to one who has been given, more shall be given, and he will have in abundance, but from the one who has not, even what he has shall be taken away." What is he saying here? Israel had looked for a Messiah. The Messiah had come. They had rejected the Messiah. And Jesus says, "I speak to them in parables because it's not for them to know." Parables are partially, at least, a judgment on unbelief. He's saying to them, "You have willfully rejected the kingdom, and now I will judiciously reject you. You will no longer understand what is being said." See, it gives the picture of a man really who, or a woman or a child who rejects Christ, rejects the king, and goes into a downward spiral of unbelief. And Jesus says, what they knew, it will be taken from them. And I will give what they knew, I will give you who know more. You will have more in abundance. It sounds like another parable, doesn't it? Parable of the talents, or parable of the lender who gave money and says, "What have you done with my money? I've done nothing with it." Well, you give it to someone else. And that's what Jesus is saying here, that parables are, first of all, designed to conceal the secrets of the kingdom. He goes on to say, "This is why I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. I have told them about the kingdom, and they don't see, they don't hear, they choose to reject this, and so now I speak to them in parables." Verse 14, "Indeed, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled that says, 'You will indeed hear, but never understand. You will indeed see, but never perceive. For the people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and their eyes they have shut, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn, and I would heal them.'" Jesus is saying they have been rejected because of unbelief. And so to them, the parables are a sign of judgment. And he quotes Isaiah 6, verses 9 and 10 in this passage. And remember Isaiah, in Isaiah 6, it was the year King Uzziah died, and Isaiah sees a vision. And after that vision, Isaiah preached judgment to Israel because they had sin and drunkenness and immorality and bribery and oppression of the poor and hypocrisy. And God said they will no longer hear. They will no longer see. And when King Uzziah died, it was a dark time spiritually for Israel. And Jesus is saying that was the first fulfillment of this, and this is the second fulfillment of this. Because I will explain the parables only privately to the disciples. Now in verse 16, there is good news. But, one of the best words in scriptures, three little words, always good news generally follows, but. But, blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say to you, many prophets and righteous people longed to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear but did not hear it. Did not hear it. This is the good news. Parables not only conceal the secrets of the kingdom, but they reveal the secrets of the kingdom. Jesus reveals the secret of the kingdom to the disciples. What is the secret of the kingdom? The secret of the kingdom is that you don't get into the kingdom simply because you're a nation. The secret of the kingdom is there is a time period where the kingdom's going to look different than what you think it should look like. There is a period of time where repentance will be preached while we live in this already, but repentance will not be preached once Christ returns because there will be no need for repentance to be preached. And so he's saying, they do not know this, but you do, because I'm going to explain this parable to you. Let me show you one other thing that goes along with this secret, because the disciples did not get all of this immediately either. It was not until after the crucifixion and resurrection that they truly understood this. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, there is something that the Apostle Paul shows us here that I think is very important for us to see. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, he begins in chapter 1 talking about, for the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who have been saved, it is the power of God. And then he says, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. And then if you go down to chapter 2 in verse 9, he says this, but as it was written, no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the heart of man imagined what God has prepared for those who love him. And we read that and we think that's talking about heaven. Well, it's not talking about heaven. Heaven's not mentioned here anywhere. What is it talking about? It's talking about what the apostles preached. It's talking about the cross of Christ. No eye has heard nor ear heard, or heart of man imagined. No one could have imagined the gospel, that God himself would come to earth, die on the cross, be raised from the dead so that we can live. No one would have imagined that. That is a secret. That is a secret of the kingdom. And that's what Jesus is saying, that they need to explain the secrets of the kingdom. There's a lot more here. But know this, parables are to conceal and parables are to reveal. But to reveal takes the illuminating work of the Holy Spirit. Jesus revealed this. He illumined the hearts of his disciples to believe this. And they did. And now we have the Word and we have the Spirit who works in our heart to illumine us, to convict us of the truth of his Word, that Christ died and he was buried and he was raised again and he's now seated at the right hand of the Father interceding for us, as Josh mentioned earlier. And so we know and we learn the same way the disciples did, through the illuminating work of Christ and the Spirit in our lives. And so we understand the parables. Why? Because Jesus explained the parables. And very briefly, let's look at that beginning in verse 18. Here then is the parable of the sower. When one hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. The word is the seed. The seed is the word. The heart is the soil. This is what was sown along the path. The word was sown. The gospel was sown. The message of the kingdom was sown. As for what was sown on the rocky ground, this is the one whose who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. missed the path. The path is the hard-hearted guy. The hard-hearted guy is the one who never repents because he doesn't want his reputation to be hurt. He's the one who's arrogant. He's the one who thinks he can do it all. He's the hard-hearted guy. The guy who is in the rocky ground, the rocky ground heart, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures for a while, and the tribulation comes and arises on account of the word. He comes to church. Someone probably comes to church because either they're in trouble or they need to be accepted, or they're struggling in their life and they get acceptance, and there's immediately the seed germinates and joy appears until a difficulty comes, until the persecution comes, the pressure, the word actually is pressure of the world comes. And what do? The sun burns them up, and they never don the doors of the church again. These are the people who we have all known. They grow up, they look, well, they're taller than everybody else because they germinate so quickly, and then they're gone. That's the rocky soil. He also talks about the thorny soil, and in the thorny soil, these are the people who grow up and the cares of the world and the finances of the world, they choke them out. They want the word and they want the world, but they want the world more than they want the word. And as they grow up in the church or they come to church and they hear the word, it all sounds good. But then they think about their bank account and their home and their career and their reputation, and that becomes more important. It's a life of idolatry. And Jesus talked about that, didn't you? You cannot serve both God and mammon. You cannot serve both God and money. You will love the one and hate the other. But then there's the good soil. And then good soil, what's the difference? The difference is not only the condition of the heart, but the result. And the result is fruit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. All of that grows, and there are deep roots, and that person grows, and there's fruit of praise and fruit of righteousness in their lives. What's the point of all this? What is the point of what Jesus is saying? The point is simply this. There are four soils. I guess the first thing we'd ask is, what soil am I? What soil are you? That would be one application of this. But I don't think that's really the main thing that Jesus is saying here. He's saying there are people who don't understand the secrets of the kingdom. There are people who don't understand why God is not ruling over all the world. And there are four responses to that. And three of them are negative. One of them is positive, but it is positive. In other words, Jesus was the original sower, but when we follow and we say what Jesus says, we become sowers. We become those who are sowing seed. And Jesus is saying, you're going to sow the seed, and you're going to run up to some hard-hearted guys, and they're going to reject what you say. You're going to experience some, you think, there's joy in their life, and they have come to Christ, and you're going to plug into them, and you're going to be disappointed. And you're going to experience some who come to church, and you can't tell the difference immediately, but the world's going to eventually choke them out, and they're going to be gone. But there's going to be good soil, and there are going to be results in your sowing. So what Jesus is saying is, you need to keep sowing. You need to keep sowing the seed. And the point is, you don't have to be overly talented to sow seed. And you don't have to be a biblical scholar to sow seed. And you don't have to be an evangelist to sow seed. And you don't have to be outgoing to sow seed. And you don't have to be experienced to sow seed. You just have to be faithful. and you have to sow seed. And that's what Jesus is saying. And the more that you sow the seed, the more the seed finds the good soil. And so keep sowing. Hard soil, shallow soil, thorny soil. It may not always be hard, shallow, and thorny soil, because God cultivates the heart. And the point is this, that we're not responsible for the response of people. God is responsible for the response of people because he cultivates the heart. He determines who turns to him, who repents to him. He determines that. The power of the seed in the hearts of those that have been plowed by God. But we need to plow the seed. You don't have to be responsible for the way people respond, but you've got to plow the seed. The kingdom has come, but it is yet to be fulfilled. And now is the time of sowing. When Christ returns, there'll be no need to sow any longer. So believe the promise of Jesus in the parable of the sower that there will be a harvest, but the seed has got to be sown. Paul put it this way in Romans chapter 1, verse 16. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. So go, cast broadly. God will prepare the soil, and there will be fruit.